Hi, this is Candace Michelle, and welcome back to another segment of Our Community. You know, there's quite a bit going on with COVID, test shortages, and some new healthcare providers coming to town. But my friend Diana is still under the weather, so all that's going to have to wait until next week. Today, I'm joined by Kelly Hansen, and we're going to talk about dogs, which is like one of my favorite things. Hi, Kelly. And welcome to the show.
Hi, Candace. Thank you.
So you're relatively new to Brookings, aren't you?
Yes, my husband and I moved here and our two dogs. We moved here about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you come from?
We were in Washington State, where I had run my daycare, boarding, and business.
Daycare for kids or for dogs?
For dogs, of course. Daycare, boarding, and training.
I love that.
I did that for about 21 years.
Wow.
We decided it was time to kind of semi-retire and move to the beach somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And what made you choose Brookings?
Honestly, it was the location of our home.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to the ocean, we wanted to have a little view and a little property, mm-hmm. and we just got lucky on day two of finding the perfect place.
Oh, wow. That is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, when we moved here, my husband and I, we wanted, he in particular wanted to be able to see the ocean. And, you know, finding ocean view property is a little bit difficult, right? Even 20 years ago when we moved here, something like 20 years ago. But we have a little view, you know, you can see the ocean and it's
just enough.
Yeah, it is. It's just perfect, you know, and I can hear it at night, which is, I like that. I like being able to hear those waves crashing against the shore, you know. Oh, yeah, it's kind of amazing. Amazing.
A little bit of heaven.
It is. I think so. I love it here.
So yeah. Do we.
Yeah. I will never move. I mean, they literally are going to have to take me out kicking and screaming. So you for 21 years, you dealt with dogs. You trained them. You boarded them. And daycare. And daycare would be interesting. So you'd have like a set number of dogs would come over to your house and play together?
Yeah, I had an average of 25 to 35 dogs.
A day?
A day.
Whoa!
We had about 8.5 acres. So this was more like an outdoor, it was a dog park.
Yeah.
So the dogs that I would take care of, lots of them were training clients, mm-hmm. and they came to me lots of times for socialization issues,
mm-hmm.
Baby puppies that need to be with others, mm-hmm. and other dogs who need a little bit of a reminder how to be social and appropriate around others. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other dogs are just those who get along with everybody and anybody and just need a cool place to run around and be a dog. And be outside. That was important.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And 8 acres is a good amount of property. That's a nice size.
It was a lot of space. We had about mm-hmm. 2 of those acres for dogs to run around and fenced, mm-hmm. cross-fenced, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it was an enormous amount of work, but I wouldn't trade it. It was a really great experience.
Did you have all kinds of dogs or were there specific breeds that tended to show up or?
There happened to be a lot of Labrador type shepherd.
That's because we love labs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pity crosses, but I mm-hmm. had anything from Chihuahuas to large breeds, deer hounds and wolf hounds and everybody in between, just at all breeds, really. Because they're all social. They need mm-hmm. to hang out with other dogs, big dogs and little dogs. Little dogs need to be around big dogs. Big dogs need to be around little dogs and know how to hang out in a pack together.
So I've noticed that in my experience, my daughter has a tendency to like the small ones. Pug mixes. Mm-hmm. I think her last one was a chug, I think. Yeah, chihuahua pug. And not very, yeah, she was a pain in the butt. But they tend to think of themselves as huge. They don't really see themselves as being little.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point you bring up, because lots of breeds have natural tendencies. Border collies herd things, as well right. as other breeds, of course. So I think it's important to understand what natural kind of behaviors your specific dog brings to the table. It can be a challenging when you adopt a dog that is kind of a mix, but lots of times there might be predominant behaviors. Again, if you had a shepherd cross, female shepherds happen to be a little chatty. They can be a little noisy, but that doesn't certainly mean they're all like that. So just right. understanding the breed that you have gives right. us an idea about what kind of behaviors we might find with them.
Because they are very different. I mean, different,
absolutely.
Different breeds are very different.
Very different. Yes, for sure. And that's important because dogs that are working need to have pronounced herding behaviors. Again, border collies and those type of dogs who are on farms, who it's their job to herd things, make sure that the animals are in the right space. You want that breed to have a pronounced behavior like that.
Right.
There are some, I'm not picking on, mm-hmm. I'm just talking about border collies. Some have a more pronounced prey drive, which means that they're going to, you know, if they see something that needs to be moved, they'll move it. Some of them don't have so much of a prey drive. So those are dogs that aren't going to be as interested in that activity.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, you know, not all border collies want to herd to the intensity of those ones that are
right.
have long lineages of hardcore working dogs that, you know.
Yeah, we had a, I think it was a border collie. It was basically a Heinz 57, but mm-hmm. We got it from a pound, and she was the smartest dog I have ever been around. I mean, she just, wow, it was I mean, she'd learned something the first time. She learned mm-hmm. it, and you didn't have to teach her again. She had it. Yeah.
And there are some dogs who just have that kind of, I mean, she's watching you. She's watching you for cues. She wants to work. It's mm-hmm. her job to work.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other breeds that don't want to work as much. I have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniels who, you know,
oh, come on, Mom. What? I got to work again? I worked yesterday.
I grew up with chow chows, and it was very similar. You'd throw the ball once for them, and they'd look at you like, oh, I'm not going to get that. You can't.
Meanwhile, I've got a 95 pound black lab who will fetch that ball every time you throw it.
Lovely.
In fact, I have to actually say to her, that's it, you need to take a rest, because she's right. panting, right? Panting
sure.
so hard. It's like, all right, now you need to rest. Yeah.
It's her thing. It's what
absolutely.
She wants.
Absolutely.
It's what she wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's really cool, because I think when they show us what it is that they want to do, why don't we give them that? You know, if
yep.
a dog really likes to run and chase the ball, they can chase the ball. They can work for chasing the ball. They can chase other things.
Yep.
Yeah. They show you what they want to do a lot of times.
And we got a ball that is made for kids. It's got big holes in it that that a baby could get its fingers in and stuff. And and that's the ball that we play with in the house, because it's so lightweight that no matter what it's bouncing off of, and believe me, it bounces off of a lot of stuff, it's not going to hurt it, right? It's not going to break anything. It's a lightweight ball, and she can grab it with her teeth. I mean, that's, you know, it's easy. But a lot of times she'll see me pick up my cell phone, and that's her cue that that means that we're going to play, because I can play with her when I'm on my cell phone, right? I sit down on the couch and I'm talking on my cell phone, and I can just toss the ball and she brings it back to me. And that way she's getting exercise. I'm not so much, which is okay with me, but I can also get some work done. I can talk on the phone and, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's, you figure out what works and you just do what works.
And that's a really great point, because dogs do the same thing. You didn't have to teach, you didn't set out to teach that dog when you pick up the phone. That means you get to play ball.
That's right.
That's called classical conditioning.
Yeah.
That dog figured out, hey, when mom picks up the phone, she will play with me.
And that's right.
They pair things really well. People pick up the keys.
Yeah.
And then you go to the door and the dog, it doesn't take him very long to go, hey, when they pick up the keys, that means you're leaving me.
Yeah.
In some cases, this is where anxiety might begin, or,
of course,
you know, more rambunctious behavior, because they're anticipating what's next and they might not be liking it so much.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I love about this community, and there are many things that I love, but one of them is how many dogs are here and how people value their dogs. I mean, there's, it just feels like there's a culture here that really values dogs. And it's just delightful. You know, it's like dogs are not kind of this side thing that you occasionally think about. They are, they're like the mainstay of your life. And it's,
are you saying that? Are you saying that dogs are people too?
Well,
yes.
In my family, they are. I mean, you know, I mean, Cola has, you know, she's got a lot of rights in this family, you know? She gets to express what she wants to express.
We spell daughter, D-O-G-T-E-R.
I love that. So you and I were talking the other day about these relationships and how sometimes, in spite of our best intentions, things don't always go as planned. Sometimes our dogs develop some annoying habits or do things that we don't understand or that we wish they wouldn't do. But just because you have a dog or have had many dogs and love them to death, it doesn't mean that you actually are using the right approach to getting them to do what you want them to do, right?
Correct.
So what are some of the important things that you have found that people need to know when they're interacting with their dogs?
I'm going back to just a little bit about what you said about people in this community really hold their dogs real close to their heart, really respect them.
Yep.
I know that when you're hanging around with your dog, we're doing something to either promote our relationship with them or to put it in decline. Lots of relationships work that way, right? So understanding that, and understanding that dogs are pack animals, they don't think like we do. They have a different set of rules for pack hierarchy and that kind of thing. So when we understand that they're not people in little fuzzy suits.
They're not.
I know. I know. It feels like they are so much. Yes, I know. So they are pack animals. They understand hierarchy. And I find that they really, really need and desire leadership. And leadership is a relatively easy thing to teach a dog when you know what motivates them. Okay. We know most people know what we can guess what motivates people, but unless you've studied canines, domesticated dogs, you might not know what motivates our own dogs.
Is the motivation different for each dog? Like,
no.
So nope. Food is a motivator, right?
Yes. Food is, because think about dogs in a pack. Like in a family, there's typically at least one leader. Sometimes there's two leaders. And then there's everybody in between. And then there's the guy low on the totem pole. So we call the ones at the top the alphas. And in a pack of dogs, there's typically an alpha male and an alpha female. They have different jobs, but there's an alpha male, alpha female. There's the betas, which are all the everybody in between who's just there to get along, play, you know, get along. And then there are, again, those omegas that are kind of rare, as well as I think alphas, true alphas, and those dogs who kind of come into a space and, you know, hey, you know, it's all about me. True alphas don't necessarily have to do that. I think insecure dogs come into a space and it's almost like a bully on the schoolyard. You know, you don't have to push others around. A true alpha can walk into a space and simply make eye contact with other dogs. And that alpha is doing things with its ears and its tail where its weight is shifted either forwards or backwards. And all those other social dogs understand that immediately and respond accordingly.
That's fascinating. That is fascinating.
It's amazing to watch. And I got to stand in a field and watch this kind of interaction for years and years and years. So I see it. And again, not all dogs have learned how to be social. And that's part of the reason why I had this off-leash dog park with me at the handle, making sure that the interactions between these dogs went well and they had a good experience, because good experiences just kind of compound one another. The more positive you have, the more positive we'll get. You know, we don't want a whole lot of negatives. That'll set us backwards.
Right.
So it's really about leadership, and that's food, when a dog eats, if we have them do anything for it, simply sit or leave it until we ask, until we say it's okay, because it really is about us giving them direction. Not
so. Do you think that they should do something?
I think so.
To get fed. I mean, there should
absolutely
be something.
Not all dogs. I think young ones. I think ones who are transitioning from, or in a kind of training program, if they, you know, if there's a little attitude or aggression or whatever, I like to start right back at the basics. Most dogs can sit when we ask them to, and we want to ask them only once. Of course, we don't want to keep repeating the verbal signal.
Please sit down, please. Yeah, that's pitiful, right?
Yeah. Well, interesting. The more you repeat the command, I call it a verbal signal. The more you repeat it, studies show it actually increases motor activity in dogs. So if you're trying to get your dog to sit and stay, and you're going, stay, sit, 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 stay, 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 more likely than not, you're getting agitated. And the dog can hear that in your voice, can see it in your body language. And what they're going to try to do is settle you down, calm you down. And lots of times they do that by doing these movements. So you'll think, hey, the dog's not sitting and staying. And the dog's like, no, I'm trying to calm you down.
Oh, that's funny.
It is. So if you just know just a little bit, just a couple of key pieces about how to get behavior, when to reward it, now you're talking to the dog in the language it understands. It's almost like they would, if they could speak to you, oh my gosh, finally, you're communicating with me in a way that I can truly understand. One word means, I know, sit only means put your bottom on the ground. Come only means come to me in the most direct fashion. Let me touch you when you get there. Down means put your chest on the ground. Stay there until I tell you to do something different. So when you're very specific on the word, it makes it very easy for the dog to understand what you're talking about. When you teach them sit, just means sit. Put your butt on the ground until I ask you to do something different. That is the beginning of a sit stay.
And see, that seems like the way you're describing it, it sounds so easy. But my experience with dogs is that that's not really easy to do. That, you know, I say sit and she looks at me like, yeah, maybe.
Well, firstly, did you set up when you, my mom used to say this, never ask a dog to do something you can't make them do the first time or by the second. So it doesn't do you any good to yell at a dog that's across the yard, come, when you haven't really taught them what come means. Okay. In essence, what you're doing when you say asking a dog to come to you when you haven't told them what come means yet, you're mm-hmm. really teaching them to wait until you tell me something that I understand.
Wow.
Yeah. So come. And again, it increases motor activity in dogs and they'll try to settle you down. And one way they settle you down is to get still.
Oh.
I worked with a dog years ago. The guy's like, Dad, this dog will not come to me. And I said, well, show me what you're doing. And he threw the ball and the dog ran after it. It was a long way and turned around and dropped and turned her head to the side. And I could see she was kind of looked like she was licking her lips. I know that laying down, turning her head, and tongue flicking is something called calming signals. This wonderful woman, Turid Rugas, she's a Norwegian dog trainer, studied, found out all these about 35 different signals. And so I feel like sometimes I can hear what these dogs are saying because I know what these behaviors are.
Wow.
So he threw the ball, she did that, and he said, see, look, she's not coming. And I went, all right. And so I said, I was taking care of her for the day. And I said, oh, well, let's see if I can do anything about that. And he left. And I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. So I showed her the ball and she goes, oh, I can't wait. And I threw the ball for her as far as I could. And when she was running away from me, I turned sideways to where she was. And I got down on one knee and I looked at the ground. So she got the ball, turned around. When she saw me, she didn't see anybody standing up facing her, almost yelling at her, come, come, get over here, come. Right. She saw something that was neutral. I'm turned sideways. I'm looking down. And I was very calm. Hey, Allie, come. And I tell you what, that dog was to me in 5 seconds. She dropped that ball like, yippee, because there was absolutely zero conflict. What she would consider conflict. I'm facing her. I'm a little aggressive, kind of like Daddy looked, because he was irritated. He wasn't aggressive. He was just a little like, dang, dog.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was listening to her. She's trying to calm Daddy down. Daddy's, there's obviously something. Daddy's not happy.
There's a problem with Daddy.
Yes. She has no idea it has anything to do with the ball.
Oh, amazing.
She just is trying to settle him down. That's why when you ask a dog to come to you and you start getting irritated mm-hmm. and they turn the other way and start sniffing the ground, these again are some of those calming signals I talked about. When you see dogs first interacting with each other, when they first meet, they move slowly, right? They stop at a distance and they sniff the ground.
Right.
They might kind of serpentine towards each other very calmly. At the same time, they're doing things with their ears and their mouth to say to the other one, hey, I'm just here to get along. Like all those betas, just here to get along. So I figure, well, if we're expecting a dog to come all the way and learn our language, I don't think that's fair. Why don't we learn a little bit about, or as much as we can, about their behavior? Man, it makes training so much easier.
Yeah.
You can tell when you ask a dog to sit and stay above its ability for duration. So you might ask your dog to sit and stay. And in essence, it's waiting for a reward. If you wait too long for the reward, the dog's going to just get up and go, well, guess we're not playing this game.
Right.
So when you were talking earlier about getting your dog to sit and stay for 2 seconds. You want to break up the action. You want to tell the dog free or okay, you can go play before the dog gets up, right?
So is there a reward? So if you say sit and stay and they do that, do you reward it?
Yes, okay. Immediately. And so the reward can be food. It could be attention, or it could be toys. You can actually, if you've worked to a level with your dog that these behaviors become very reliable, 80% and more, and actually more like 75%, you start taking away the food treat. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to give them a food treat every single time they sit, just in the beginning to get that reliability. And then when it starts to become reliable at about 75%, we fade the food treat away. And then we can reward them with other things, like simply looking at them with a calm face and a gentle tone in our voice, maybe just a little scratch behind the ear. Because again, rewards are food, toys, interaction. I mean, my gosh, that's a huge reservoir of positive reinforcers that we could give a dog. It's not just a food treat.
Right.
Lots of dogs find lots of things rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. Just being beside you is sometimes, you know, that's what they want. They just want to be right beside you, you know?
Yeah. I had a dog in class who was really terrified of being indoors, and especially indoors with other strangers and other dogs. Mm. It was a very large room. So this owner and dog, I had them sit right next to the door. And when the dog would sit, the reward for sitting was it got to go outside. And it went outside and went, oh, okay, great. This is great. Now it's time to come back in, sit down, sit. And the reward for that is, yay, it gets to go outside. So you have to understand what your dog's motivation is. Because it's not always, I know dogs who care less for food.
Mm-hmm.
They care less, but they do anything for that ball.
Yeah.
They do anything for a little scratch on the head or, you know,
maybe
just to go outside. So really understanding who, understanding who you're living with, what their motivation is, what they were bred to do, and understanding just a little bit about how they communicate with each other. And again, understanding that we're always doing something to promote our relationship with dogs or put it in decline. I prefer the latter to, do something positive. So,
exactly.
I mean, it's a lot like raising a healthy child, human being, you know, you get a lot more with love and understanding and respect, gentle corrections.
Mm-hmm,
I don't use prong collars or choke chains or shocking devices because in my training, I just don't need it.
Yeah, that's excellent. I would really like to learn how to manage my dog without the prong collar because there's no way she and I go for a walk, but it's she that's walking me.
Sure.
You know.
And and there are lots of equipment. There's something called a gentle leader head collar. There are other devices that work on a dog's natural ability or when a dog is pulling tight against a leash, we call that opposition reflex. And when the leash is tight, the message to the dog is keep pulling.
That's not the right message.
I know.
Whoops.
Correct. And I sometimes I think a dog might after a while go, geez, mom, I think you're gaining a couple of pounds here. All of a sudden, you're really hard to drag down the road. So this is interesting because the human thinks, I'm going to take my dog for a walk. And that means we're going to go all the way around the block. So I'm going to tire the dog out. It's going to get its exercise. Dogs who consistently pull on a lead, I'll walk them to the end of your driveway and back, up and back and up and back and up and back and up and back and up and back. They're going to get their exercise. And at the same time, they're going to learn if you pull, mommy stops, or mommy or daddy or my person right. will stop. Right. When the dog makes the leash loose, then we'll go again. But pulling, at way if a dog immediately, you know, as soon as you start walking, they go out to the end of the leash, mm-hmm. stop. You never get to pull back. So you figure, well, if I can't pull on the lead to get the dog to come back to me, mm-hmm. how is there supposed to be slack in the lead, right?
Right.
Right. Well, can you get the dog's attention? Because it's the dog's responsibility. They have to move towards you. And when they do that, the leash becomes slack and now you can go. Do you have a voice? Can you make a right. sound? Can you make a clappy noise? How about a squeaky? Sometimes right. what I'll do is start, I'll get the dog's attention and look like I'm going to go the other way. And of course, dog's like, well, hey, I'm going to go first, right? So they're going my healing is kind of funny because it's stop, walk, turn in a circle, stop, walk, turn in a circle. I don't want the dog to think it knows where we're going. We're the leader. Right. I don't want to teach the dog when we walk out this door. That means you're going to walk down to the end, and that's where Scooter is. And boy, that little dog Scooter likes to jump and bark and say, hey, what are you doing? And then we get down to the end of the street, and then there's a little cat that hangs out on the corner that, there's that tree over there. Yeah. So as soon as you start going, the dog's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait.
I know. I got these things I'm going
to
do.
I've got all these things to do it. And I want the dog to get to see all those things, but it just doesn't get to take, oh, this is good. It doesn't get to take the lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has to take direction from you. When the dog makes the lead slack, you can mm-hmm. go. And it's not that difficult. If you start with little puppies, it's a lot easier. If you have a dog that's been dragging people down the road, it's going to take a little bit of work. Mm-hmm. Typically 4 to 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. habits and human beings take about that long as well. Mm-hmm. 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks, depending on what the behavior is. But as long as the people are consistent and your direction is clear and you reward them with what it is that they find valuable, I mean, amazing. That's pretty much the heading over all training goes that way. Know your critter. Mm-hmm. I say critter. Know mm-hmm. what your critter is, what their currency is, or what they're willing to work for. Mm-hmm. Give it to them at little bits. Training is a little teeny bit at a time. Mm-hmm. 10 seconds of training, that's it. I don't want any more than that. Sit, stay, toss the treat. The dog gets it. It comes back like, hey, what do we do? Sit. I throw the treat again. And that might take 10 seconds because I want the dog to go, wow, can we have another training session?
Right.
And I'm the boss. And I say, oh, well, we can. Maybe. Right. Maybe if you're really good. Well, when we control it, you know what motivates the dog.
Yeah.
And you have those real high motivators with you. Yeah. And you make training, one word means one thing. You make it really easy for the dog to understand what you're talking about. Man, you can get a lot done, really. You can correct behavior and you can teach new behavior. And yes, old dogs can learn new tricks.
New tricks.
Just like people.
I wondered about that because I've heard that said, you know, for years and years, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But, I mean, my dog is, you know, 9 and a half, and I feel like she could learn new stuff. I mean, why not?
I wonder, in that old saying, really, were they talking about canines or people when they said an old dog?
There we go.
Because you had mentioned shelter dogs, and lots of times when people adopt a dog, they might not necessarily want to keep the dog's same name. Mm-hmm. Or in some cases, the dog has the human is classically conditioned to understand that the dog's name means something bad is going to happen because mm-hmm. the person called the dog and the dog didn't do what the person wanted and mm-hmm. they were punished. Mm-hmm. So the dog learns my name means something not very good. So it's very difficult. If you're adopting a dog or if you're, you know, bringing in a dog to your home, Right. And you say its name and it might go the other way or mm-hmm. try to be elusive. It is super easy to teach a dog a new name. I mean, wow. it's really easy. So wow. there you go in teaching a dog new tricks. You can, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have different nicknames for my dogs and they know what they are, right?
Oh, Phoebe, yeah.
Phoebe knows what Phoebe is, but sometimes she knows what Dinky is or,
yes,
you know,
yes.
come
or
here,
pumpkin head.
There
or,
you go.
Know, yes.
Right. They, yeah. they understand.
They do. They understand exactly.
For sure. Because go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there was something that you said when we were talking before about the signs that a dog will give you when they're communicating. And one of the things that you were talking about was their hackles. And I had no idea what hackles were or what it meant or any. I immediately think when a dog's hackles go up, it means they're pissed off, right? And you know,
lots of people think that. Yep.
Right. So hackles are what? What is it? What are hackles?
It's technically piloerection, and that means the skin tightens, the muscles tighten around the skin, and the hair follicles raise up.
Okay.
And there's lots of things. Again, there's kind of like goosebumps to people, okay. except I think that they're a little bit more communicative in dogs because I think dogs can turn it on when they want to. It's harder for people to turn on goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we get goosebumps again. My husband heard a song earlier and he had a positive reaction to that and he got goosebumps. So hackles or mm-hmm. when the hair stands up on your dog's back or between their shoulders, mm-hmm. it can actually go from the base of their neck all the way down to the base of their tail where their tail starts.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that in my dog. Yes.
Yeah. And it depends. Sometimes they don't need to piloerect the entire back. Some dogs don't. Some dogs only go between the shoulders. But in essence, what it means is they're overstimulated. Now, overstimulated in a positive way. They're playing with other dogs. And I know little dogs that raise their hackles because they're really excited to play with others and they kind of want to make themselves look big around a bigger dog. It's really cute.
So they're not mad. They're just playing.
They're overstimulated.
Overstimulated.
And so it's up to us, the human, to kind of look at the scenario and think, if hackles raised on a dog that is not very social, meaning it doesn't do well with people, and now a stranger comes to your house, those hackles are a defensive posture. The dog's trying to make themselves look bigger. Mm-hmm. To the foe that's, you know, trying to come in.
Right.
A baby puppy, little puppies can jump around when they get really excited. Sometimes they'll raise their hackles as well. And so you would look at the baby puppy and you wouldn't think, oh, the baby puppy is having aggression problems or not that, or is fearful because a stranger's coming. And so it's really up to us to look at the scenario that the dog is in. And then we can do our best to decipher what it is that's causing this in this dog. No one on the planet knows what's going on in a dog's head. At a conference years ago, a speaker put it really very eloquently. We are all professional trainers. We're all professional second guessers.
Yeah, of course.
We base what we see or what we tell our clients based on our experience with canine body language and behavior and our experience watching groups of dogs. And you can't ever think that hackles mean a dog is going to be aggressive or they're fearful or they're happy. We're just guessing to the best of our ability. So if you have a dog that has had trouble around other dogs, not very social, and they come in close proximity and your dog, the doesn't have good social skills, raises those hackles, you'd be pretty sure that it's going to have something to do. It's probably a defensive posture because your dog is seeing another and they might not have the social skills to know what to do when another dog is around.
That is fascinating. I mean, when you're talking about all this stuff, it's like, oh yeah, my dog does that. And yeah. Oh yeah, my dog does that. And I didn't understand. I really thought it was aggression. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, at least for her, because she's fairly timid in life.
Exactly. That's
it. Yeah. That it's more about she's worried.
So exactly. So if a stranger comes up to her and she'll probably raise her hackles because she wants to, in essence, say to the person, yeah, look at me. I'm big. I'm tough. You don't want to mess with me.
You're not going to mess with me and you're not going to mess with my mom. Not right.
Because correct. And on the inside, they're going, oh gosh, please go away. I just go away.
I'm so scared.
I hope this works. I hope they don't really know what piloerection is. Although on the other hand, it's a great idea that people understand what piloerection and hackles are, because when now you can help to keep yourself safe and your family safe. If you go to somebody's house or someplace out in the world and a dog raises his hackles, I think it's best, unless you have access to the owner and you can ask, is this a friendly dog? It's best just to kind of look at him and go, oh, okay, you're overstimulated and I'm not going to overstimulate you anymore. I can just back off. Not all dogs want to be touched or want to be approached or... I grew up with chow chows. Lots of them could care less about you.
Right.
Ours were lovely, but they weren't really people dogs.
No, you're
so
kind
much.
Of irrelevant.
Yeah. I sat for you last week. I don't really feel
I don't
like
have
it.
To do it again, do I?
No, just lovely. Yeah. So
if you're going to adopt a dog from a shelter, for instance, how would you go about doing that? Like, I would think that there'd be some kind of self-reflection that you would want to do. Like, what do I want in terms of a companion? Like, do I want a dog that's going to run with me on walks and stuff? Do I want a dog that's mostly going to sit with me on the couch? Do I want a dog that I can play fetch with?
Right.
Or, what do I want from this companion?
Well, I tell you what, you hit the nail on the head. I wish more people would actually sit down and think about that before you bring a dog into your home. I can't tell you how many people over 70 get a baby German Shepherd or a really, really large breed. And I think, in 10 years, let's say in between 5 to 10 years, is your physical ability going to be able to catch up or maintain the physical ability of this dog? So not just today, but my criteria is always when your dog, for some reason, cannot lift itself off the ground and needs to be taken to the vet, you, it's human, should be able to pick it up and move it. It's very difficult to do when you have an 80-pound dog and they can't get up, and maybe you're the only one in the home. So just kind of thinking about size and our physical ability. I think that's really important.
And that really has come as kind of a shock to me, because somehow I thought I was like never going to age.
That's right? Exactly right. You've always had that breed. You've always had Goldens, or you've always had,
And I've always been able to lift if I had to lift them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And German wire-haired pointers who just like are super active and want to hunt, and the dog will continue to do it. But we have to think about our physical limitations as well in the whole process. So I really like that you said that. So really considering the life that you're going to have with this dog, not just the activities that you want to be involved in, but what physical activities can we still be involved in as we get older?
5 or 10 years down the road. Because it's, they say, you know, don't buy a dog just because you like a puppy and you want a puppy around. Like,
oh yeah.
That's a commitment for the next 10 years of your life. So, you know, think about it in those terms. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I really recognize it because I mean, as I say, my dog is close to 95 pounds. And if mm-hmm. she goes down, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get her up.
You're going to need help or a ramp.
Exactly.
I know lots of dogs, as they get older, we need to teach them how to use a ramp to get up into the car.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have ever used one before. So I actually ended up adopting a dog because I was hired to teach it to go up a ramp. And I learned very, very quickly that this woman was well above her ability to work with this dog. And it was a golden, and my husband and I have a real soft spot for goldens.
Of course.
We already had 6 dogs. It's like, what's another one?
Yeah, what's one more?
you know, I had a daycare and boarding facility. There were gobs of dogs anyway. Yep. It's like, we can. Yep. And, you know, when we think, well, you know, he's going to have a super life with us anyway. And he did. So, so getting back to what you said about how, you know, a shelter dog, by all means, not just asking yourself the question of, you know, what breed do you like? What breed do you like to look at? That's very important for a lot of people, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. or at least they tell me that it is.
Right.
And really taking advantage of the staff at your shelter, because they really have spent time with these animals. They put them through temperament tests. They can tell you, you know, whether the dog, you know, can you touch its tail? Can you pick up its feet and do its nails? Can you put your hands near its mouth? Mm-hmm. You know, has it been around? Lots of times when a dog is surrendered, they'll come with a little bit of history. People can say, you know, we surrendered the dog because of.
Right.
Whatever. It can be anything from allergies to aggression, or we're moving and anything in between.
Right.
But your most shelter staffs, again, know temperament testing, and their job, what they mostly want to do is place these dogs in their forever homes.
Yep.
So they really want to place the right person with the right animal.
I have to really put a shout out to Jennifer Alcorn at our local shelter, South Coast Humane, because she's pretty amazing.
Spectacular.
She has, right? I mean, she has saved, I don't know how many dogs and cats in the last couple of years, but it's phenomenal. And she knows her animals. You know, she says, just tell me what you want and I will match you up, because I know the animals.
And that means, again, she does a phenomenal job. Her staff does, and that is matching up the dog or the animal, the cat, with the right person. Because the idea is that, you know, we don't ever want to surrender an animal. When we take them from the very beginning, I think most people think, you know, this is for the long haul. I'm going to have you until one of us deceases, you know, at some point. So we don't really want to have to rehome them or, you know, surrender them to a shelter. So.
Right.
Again, your staff can really, really help with that. They'll tell you about social skills and, like you said, activity levels, what you want a dog to do, what the breed of the dog wants to do.
Right.
You know,
they're
probably, not, again, getting back to border collies, they're probably not going to place a border collie with somebody who really just wants to kind of lay low and hang out and not really be too active.
Right.
That would be more of a, you know, a slower paced dog.
And I know that people really like puppies. I mean, there's something about looking at a puppy face that you just kind of melt on the spot, right? There's something about those puppies. But that's not always the best choice, especially if you yourself are getting up in years.
Yeah.
Because puppies take an enormous amount of energy. Enormous.
I like to say, when somebody gets a puppy, my first reaction is, well, hope you're not busy for about 4 to 6 months.
Hope you have nothing else that you were planning on doing for the next 4 to 6 months. Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. Again, isn't it so much like when a family brings a new baby, or
yes,
whether you adopt somebody or a new, somebody comes to live with you? You know, it takes adjustment. It yeah, takes some time to learn. And again, when we're getting back to puppies, now what we're doing, like I said earlier, is we're conditioning behavior. We're not just waiting for the dog to figure stuff out.
Right.
Jumping on, you know, like lots of dogs will jump on people. They want attention. So most of the time a dog will jump on someone and the person will look at it. That's attention. They'll touch it, maybe to push it off. Mm-hmm. And they might say something to it. Hey, you mangy mutt, get off me. Well, you just rewarded the dog in three ways. You looked at it, you talked to it, and you touched it.
You gave it everything it wanted.
Next time they're going to go, hey, they're going to talk to their other dog next door. Hey, watch this. I know how to get my people to give me everything I want. So
that
we understand
is amazing.
What motivates the little, right, you know, what motivates them,
right,
how to reward them properly. And now we're talking about breeds, what they're bred to do, what our energy levels are, right, what we imagine doing with the dog, and understanding that even if we adopt a dog from a shelter, an older dog, it's still going to take some time. Typically, when we adopt a dog from a shelter, it's about 4 to 6 weeks where that's real, the dog's true temperament and true, if you'll, personality comes out in that 4 to 6 range. So you might go to a shelter and see a dog that seems to be pretty calm. Mm-hmm. But let's say you don't necessarily know a whole lot about body language and behavior. And so you see a dog in the shelter that is kind of, it's not coming right up to the bars. It might hang back a little bit, might come to you a little slowly. When it does get there, it might act excited and you think, oh, what a sweet, calm little animal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can start to shut down if they've been at a shelter too long, and it depends on each dog, mm-hmm, but it's stressful. You know, they're not in a home. They're not with people that they regularly see and know. You know, lots of times schedules are off, and it can be kind of stressful.
Plus, so it's noisy.
It can be
it's
very noisy.
Noisy.
Right. And most... Look at, and most dogs, when they're in our home, like we talked about, leaders control resting places. That's usually the couch or the bed. And there's
exactly,
not a lot of couches and beds in most, in all of those
that's
shelters.
Absolutely true. Yeah, absolutely.
So we understand the breed. You know, we talk to the staff and we get a really good idea about what dog is going to be the best fit for us. And then when we bring them home, give them a couple, at least 3 weeks. Don't take them on big trips. You know, I know people who like, oh, the dog is coming. And they have like a big welcome to the house dog party, you know. And the dog's like, oh, who are all these people? I don't know who my alphas are. I don't know what
right,
the routine is. I don't right, know where I'm supposed to sleep yet. So I always
right,
say,
wow,
how about we just give them just a little, this is where we're going to be teaching him sit and stay.
Mm-hmm,
where does the food come from? Where do I potty?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go for a car ride? Are there other dogs? Are there kids?
Mm-hmm.
So really in this really gentle adjustment period of kind of a boring kind of a life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some dogs, again, those more timid types will be more on the 6 week to 8 weeks. And if you have a shelter that's, you know, really noisy,
right,
it can take longer. But of course, there are those dogs who hardly anything fades or messes with them. And they can come home and be a part of everything right away. But it's really about the human beings really looking to see if the dog is behaving in a way that is, you know, it's calm. It seems happy. It's learning. It doesn't, you know, it's not barking like crazy or,
right,
you know, if you try to touch it running the other way, it's adjusting very well.
Right.
So I think it's a lovely thing to introduce yourself to the creature as the creature needs to be introduced to you and its new family and understand.
And it just takes a while. Just takes a while for you to understand who they are, what their personality is,
for
them to feel like they belong. Because they're gonna have different behavior if they feel like they belong,
for sure,
as opposed to
absolutely,
you know, yeah.
And when they know what the rules are and who the mm-hmm. bosses are, mm-hmm. you know, there's not a ton of dogs who really want to be the boss. They, you know, it's way better to let the alphas be the boss because most dogs aren't the alpha and don't want to be, and they'll actually start to exhibit anxiety type behaviors when we don't show them what the rules are. Mm-hmm. I mean, something as simple as feeding them on a schedule. Here's mm-hmm. breakfast and here's dinner, and you have to sit for it. And dogs who are good at sit, then they have to sit and down for it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you increase the criteria, sit, down, sit, or lots of different things. It's like school.
This is just really wonderful information, Kelly. I'm thrilled because it's stuff that I think a lot of us who have dogs and have had dogs, you know, all their lives mm-hmm. don't really know. You know, we don't really know. And to hear it, it's like, oh, okay. So now the behavior that our dogs have been exhibiting makes sense, right? It's suddenly kind of going, oh, that's why she's doing that. Mm-hmm. That's why she has that reaction. So, you know, this is just great. I'm thrilled.
I could talk dogs for days.
And so I think we're going to, frankly, I think we're going to. Because, when you and I were chatting the other day, it just occurred to me that you're a wealth of information and this
Thank
community
you.
Needs that information. I mean, we've got, because Jennifer has been doing such a good job that she's brought so many new dogs into the community that, you know, we really do need to make sure that we know how to be with our dogs. So
for sure,
you know, definitely.
Positive reinforcement techniques and, you know, using love first and compassion first, not resorting to coercion techniques first, you know, understanding that we're developing a relationship and we're continuing a relationship with these animals.
Yeah,
and
I love
you know
it.
that's why those couch snuggles and you know those kisses and stuff just
they're the best.
Make it that much better for sure.
So we're out of time, you know, and because Tom always puts those little signs up in the corner that say, "Yeah, you're out of time." So we're out of time. I really want to thank you for the information. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show and promise that you will come back. Okay. Promise.
I would love to do this again. Just give me the questions and I'll be here for you. No problem.
And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. Thank you as well for all of your support. Those donations of both time and money are what keeps us on the air, giving you a true community radio station. My guest today has been Kelly Hansen, and we've been talking dogs. This is Candace Michelle for our community. See you next week.